Hey, Queen Kong.
Hi, Bev.
What are you stopping everything for?
Ooh, I'm stopping everything for J-Lo's new trailer, especially this line where she says, being with you feels like home, but I left home for a reason.
Ooh, as someone who left home at 17, I'm really feeling that line. Welcome to Stop Everything, the show that makes you feel smarter about pop culture. I'm Beverly Wang, and I definitely understand how hard it is to keep up with everything. There's a constant flow of new releases that you have to act like you know about. There's the internet discourse and escándalos. And then there are the granular level celebrity long reads to digest. There's meme etymology to understand. Pop culture, it is a lot. And this is honestly how I feel about it as well. And it's my job, okay? I am constantly at the brink of exhaustion due to being over-entertained and overstimulated. This is my plight. Thank you for your sympathy. We live in an age of pop culture saturation. But you know what? It's all worth it because I cast myself into the cultural seas for you, dear listeners. Because Stop Everything is here to help. This show is your, our, mine, pop culture rescue boat. Because I need help figuring things out too. So if you're flailing at trying to keep across everything that's happening, we've got you covered. We help you figure out what's worth watching, what's not. We pick apart the discourse to understand what's happening, even if there is no simple answer. Because if you are a longtime listener to Stop Everything, you know our big thing since day one is holding many, many conflicting truths at once. Stuff is complicated, stuff is messy, but sifting and sorting through it all is therapeutic, it's healing, it's when I feel most alive. So stick with me. We'll get through it together. You are never alone. Neither am I. Because although we did say goodbye to co-host Benjamin Law last year after 6 years of a seriously disturbing, yet titillating, powerful, and fruitful on-air brother-sister work-spouse dynamic, yes, some conflicting truths right there, over the summer, we did a bit of renovating, and not only did we get some beautiful new show art, but we changed up the format a bit, and the biggest change is that, as you can hear, I'm now flying solo as your host, but we've got a whole new team of brilliant, smart, funny, savage guest critics who are going to jump on board and share the mic with me. The Stop Everything cinematic universe expands! And I'm so excited, I'm thrilled, I'm delighted to welcome our very first guest critic of this new era in the house of Stop Everything. She's not just here to talk about pop culture, she is pop culture. She was such a standout on season 2 of RuPaul's Drag Race Down Under, the best season of that show. I will stand by that forever to my grave. She was Logie nominated. And she was a finalist in that season. It is dancer, drag queen, singer, actor, and advocate, Queen Kong. Queen Kong, welcome back to Stop Everything.
Oh my God. Hello, Beverly. How you going?
I'm doing great. Thank you for being the first guest to my renovation housewarming party.
Oh, it looks so nice in here. Yeah. Like it smells brand new. You know, it feels like home. I love it. Love what you've done with the place.
I'm sure Ben Law wouldn't mind me saying that we saged him out of the corners.
Oh, bless. Well, look, sage is probably appropriate. Yeah.
Did you bring me a housewarming gift, Queen?
I did. Here's some KFC.
Oh, thank you. A full bucket.
Oh, hopefully you're not vegan.
You know me so well. This right. is why we asked you to come back for this very special first episode of 2024. Now, Queen, you are part of pop culture, is part of the Drag Race universe.
Right.
But you're also a pop culture watcher, consumer, right?
Big time. And I have to say, MAFS is like definitely one of those guilty pleasures that I'm going to try and sage out of my body this year.
Are you saying Married at First Sight?
Yes, Married at First Sight.
That's so interesting. I also saged Married at First Sight out of my body about maybe 3 seasons ago.
Was that the season with Cyrell?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
After the Cyrell season, which had a lot of infamous characters.
Oh, my goodness.
I became so obsessively engaged, but I also felt sickened. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. I felt sickened by heterosexuality.
Oh.
It was like the most blighted... Yes, it is. Most blighted and cursed representation of heterosexuality that I had seen on television. And I feel like as heterosexuals, we deserve it. We had to hold that mirror up to ourselves. But I also thought to myself, this is genuinely toxic in terms of the way those relationships are being conducted, at least the edit. And I just thought, if I don't stop, I'm going to become an ill person. So speaking from the other side, Queen Kong... Get it out of your
body. Yes, getting out of the body. Look, it's why I've been single for the past 2 years. I'll blame Married at First Sight for that.
Sorry, I can't date. I'm too busy watching Married at First Sight.
Yes, too busy trying to get that out of my system because I feel like I'll fall into a relationship as toxic as that.
So, oh, no.
Yes.
All right, so we have that one out of the way. So that's going to be excised from your diet. But, like, what else is in your pop culture diet? What delicious mess online do you love to eat up?
Like, I frequent on the blogs. Like, I stay in touch with lots of the US blogs quite a bit, especially, like, from, like, the BET perspective. Like, I do like looking at all the mess that happens over in the US because I feel like it makes me feel better about what happens here in Australia because the Americans are just on some other level in terms of what they're up to, especially with pop culture. And talking about Drag Race, obviously there's another season over in the US which has just started. They're on their 16th season. That's 15 years, 16 seasons. And RuPaul obviously has just won her 8 consecutive Emmy Award for being the best host of reality TV show, which is iconic. And so I stay up to date with lots of drag-related drama and gossip because I'm connected to that world. But yes, reality TV has definitely been something that I digest quite frequently because it makes me feel better about myself. How about you, Beverly?
I love that reality TV is something that makes you feel better about yourself. I think that is like a really honest take that we don't hear enough of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's so interesting too because, for example, with a show like Real Housewives, that whole franchise, the last season in Sydney, so popular, it's even actor nominated, right?
Oh my goodness.
It's highbrow now, baby. But I think what Real Housewives allows us to do and is an invitation to do is to cross a line into being as judgmental as we want to be within a safe space.
Oh, my goodness. That's a really interesting way of thinking about it because you're totally right. You know, they're definitely very judgmental of each other and openly so, and it's almost baited, you know, and I feel like online it's really created this interesting discourse with fans of the show, especially with Drag Race as well. I feel like they're in similar veins where because drag queens, say, for example, are hypocritical of other drag queens, we have reading culture within our community. You know, some of the fans who aren't as equipped to read, you know, are just absolute evil people online. They go into the blogs and write the worst things thinking they're reading you.
Okay.
But they're just being really mean-spirited.
Yeah, so the reading culture of drag is really interesting. Talk us through reading and what that is and what it means in drag culture.
Ooh, reading is like the ultimate art form of like insults. It's the way that you throw insults at each other where the person that's being insulted is a part of the joke, you know what I mean? And so it should be peppered 80% funny and 20% mean, you know, so you're drawing on insecurity, but you're not like poking the insecurity 100% and being like, you are ugly or your mum is fat. Like, you're not saying horrible things like that. You're literally like, you're suggesting a point, you know, to the person that makes them think that you're insulting them, but you're also like able to laugh about it. Like, I would say, for example, you might have an ill-fitting dress. I'll say, did you make that? You know, people can go, okay, I can see that you're trying to pick at something, but you're not calling me like ugly or anything. You're just suggesting that there's something.
A little part of me like shriveled a little bit with that pregnant pause when you asked about that dress queen.
Did you feel the shade through the microphone?
I felt a little bit. Now, at the risk of really putting myself out there, I mean, how would you read me?
I wouldn't read you, Tom. Yeah, there's nothing to read. Look, you've got your own show. Yeah, you are unreadable. And anyone that tries it is jealous.
Oh, my God. Beautifully played. I think that is definitely an art, and probably not enough people really understand the skill that it takes, because anything that is done well looks easy, and we all think we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
That is not the case, everybody. That is not the case. We need to respect the craft. I think that the library challenge of Drag Race is one of my favorite parts of the competition. And I think you did pretty well in that challenge. Yeah.
I won that challenge because I feel like I'm very equipped to read. But I think, you know, going back to the housewives, like it's actually really interesting because of that kind of culture of reading, you know, that's seeped into the mainstream now. You know, in Real Housewives of all franchises, you see the people are really ready with their one-liners or their comebacks. Like the banter that they have with each other, the insults, that art of insult is really interesting. And it's something that I love. Like, you know, all of them make merch based on like their one-liner. You know, that's an insult at one of the other girls, which is so iconic. I love that.
Now, Queen, yes. We're kind of coming up to the end of summer, right? And usually around summer, we take time to like watch the things that we didn't have time to watch, or maybe just watch something entirely different because we're not really, I don't know, maybe I'm just talking from my perspective. I'm not on the clock, so I'm going to watch whatever the heck thing I want, trends be damned. So that's kind of the mode I go to. It's like my sloth mode. I'm wondering what your summer pop culture diet looks like. Do you go sloth mode? Do you go rogue? Or are you?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, what happens?
Well, like this summer was really interesting because like I recently moved my family from New Zealand over to Australia. So I've got a niece and a nephew who's like 5 and 6 years old. And so when I'm not being like a big superstar on stage and being, you know, the mother of the house, I'm at home being Auntie Kong and looking after the kids. And the kids this summer wanted to go to the cinemas every day and they wanted to watch the same movie every day. So I paid full price for the same movie, which was Wish by Disney, their brand new movie, because the kids were just so obsessed with it. So I watched that about 3 times.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
That is commitment. Okay, wait, Wish. Let's just hear a little bit of this trailer so we have an idea of what you experienced 3 times this summer, Queen Kong.
Asha, come with me. The wishes of Rosas.
Wow.
People give their wishes to me, and I grant the wishes I am sure are good for Rosas.
Some of these will never be granted.
Not some. Most.
They deserve more than...
I decide
what everyone deserves.
Okay, there's a very strong John Howard kind of vibe going on with that
right.
grab.
Right.
So set this premise up for me a little bit. Looks like there's like a king...
Yes.
And he's a granter of wishes, right?
He's self-proclaimed, like he's got all these abilities to grant wishes. And so people on their birthdays, they'll make wishes privately and the wishes go to him. And he puts them into orbs and he holds them in this sort of like cell. And he only chooses 1 to 2 wishes a year that he grants. And he's really selective because some of the wishes could do really good for like the community. But he goes, I'm going to give this like really like superficial wish. I'm going to grant this wish instead of something that could really benefit, you know, the people at large, which I feel like is such an interesting sort of dialogue, you know, for what we're going through with most world leaders, to
is
be honest.
Is this a commentary on structural oppression, Queen Kong?
Well, look, that's how I took it. And that's definitely how my niece took it because she went, men should never be in charge of our wishes. I went, okay. Yeah.
I actually love pop culture reviews by children because it is raw, it is unfiltered, and they don't care what other people think about the thing. They like it or they don't like it based entirely on their own tastes, and they don't worry about the impact of their words in like a very pure way. And
absolutely.
It's so great to hear your niece saying that because I took a look through some of the reviews of Wish, and I got to say, Queen, gets some pretty bad reviews.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Like one headline from Vulture, Disney's Wish fails on every level, described it as the ultimate cop-out, a lifeless, uninspiring mess of bland brand management. Now, as someone who went to the theater, you paid 9 times.
9 times.
Full price tickets.
And snacks.
Okay. So you really paid up. How does that assessment from a professional reviewer, Bilge Ibiri in Vulture, does that ring true with you?
Oh, it was definitely layered. You know, I was more viewing it from what the kids were getting out of it, you know, because the kids, they loved the music, but they also loved like the messaging. And both of them in the same part, every time we watched it across 3 days, they went really quiet. And, you know, and the thing about the kids, they really observe and listen and absorb. And, you know, I think the more that I'm around my niece and my nephew, because they live with me now, you know, the more I'm seeing things through their eyes, you know, and it's kind of exciting because, you know, it is, as you say, unfiltered, they're honest. And like, whatever the first thought is the best thought for them. So I think they loved it, and I loved it because they loved it.
So when you weigh up the fact that the kids in your life loved it versus professional reviews saying, this is a terrible movie, how does that balance go for you? Like, what view do you care about more?
Well, like, I feel like anything, like, good or bad, like, regardless, it'll create, like, a dialogue, you know? And I think the thing with the kids is, like, you know, we get to go home and pick apart everything that they saw, observed, and felt, you know? I think the main thing is the feelings that they felt, the parts that they felt scared of or the parts that they felt confused by. Like, it's things that we get to go home and actually explain or, like, pick apart and start to get their little minds thinking about what this world is and, you know, the reality of what that kind of a view on the society that we live in can be for them, because they're just starting in school and they're starting to form their own opinions. And I find it really exciting and really interesting.
It's a really formative time. And, you know, these things that we watch when we're little kids have such an out of proportion imprint on what we remember and what kind of forms our tastes and what we carry through with us. Speaking as like a person of color, you know, your niece and nephew, is it powerful for them to see that the main character in Wish is a little brown girl?
Absolutely. I haven't been pushing things onto the kids in terms of like, we need to go and see this because this person looks like you. Naturally, the kids are getting drawn to these things because they'll see like a trailer, for example. My niece saw the trailer for Wish and went, "Uncle, we need to go and watch this." And I was like, okay. Not knowing that we're going to watch it three times. But, you know what I mean? It's like, I think naturally because they're seeing themselves and it's so normalized. Like even for myself, like I get taken back sometimes when I see diversity for more than just marketing copy. I have to catch myself sometimes and go, wow, this is like really important for like the generation, you know, like my niece or my nephew, because for them, they're just seeing it and going, ooh, that person's got the same hair as me. Yay, let's go and see it. It's such an exciting thing for them. What do you think about that in terms of like...
I'm just thinking about the pop culture that imprinted on me when I was a kid and how different it was. Like when I was a little kid, part of what I watched all the time was reruns of the Brady Bunch. And as a result, yes, as a result... For quite a while during like my late toddlerhood, like 3 to 5, I asked my parents to call me Cindy because I thought Cindy Brady was so beautiful. I wanted to have blonde hair like that. And, you know, I'd look nothing like a little blonde girl, right? And I look back now, I'm like, Cindy's not that cute. But when I was a child, I thought she was beautiful. And I thought Crystal Gayle, you know, as Wonder Woman with her hair swept over one shoulder.
Yes, absolutely.
It was the 80s, so people wore like the tight jeans and the pumps. I thought that was like style incarnate. But think about those examples and then think about the examples that kids have now. What a turnaround. Like, I don't have little Asian kids coming up and being like, call me Cindy Brady, thank goodness. That time is over. That time is done.
So true. It's so powerful. And I think, you know, even with my niece and my nephew, like, you know, because they've got Moana to look at. Like,
yeah.
You know, for us Disney, I think my favorite Disney film was always like either Mulan or Pocahontas because I felt connected to those characters, even though they were so far from, you know, our reality.
Well, Captain Shang and Mulan,
oh,
come on.
Oh, my God. Every time you trained those men. Like,
it was a sexual awakening for both of us.
Yes, it was definitely an awakening on many levels. So. But how about you? What, during the summer, what have you been hibernating and digesting?
Okay, well, if you listen to Stop Everything, you know I'm a bit of a sucker for Korean TV, right? Mm-hmm. So I did also indulge in my annual thirst trap, Singles Inferno Season 3. Do you know about Singles Inferno, Queen Kong?
I've never heard of it.
Singles Inferno is like the hottest, most polite reality dating show that you will ever find on this green earth. Because what it does is it takes very hot, very fit, very young South Koreans who are also like incredibly well-mannered, right? Mm. They have different levels of speech and they have to negotiate speaking informally. They put them on like a desert island, in this case this year too. And then there are like all sorts of challenges to see over a course of a week who will couple up and who will not. And it's called Singles Inferno because the island that they're trapped on is the Inferno. But if couples successfully choose each other at the end of a challenge, then they go to paradise, a luxury hotel for a night where they're then allowed to reveal personal details about themselves, like their age and their occupation, which are big deals in Korea. So watch that this year. I have to say, I think we're reaching that level where the third season of Singles Inferno, you know, on reality shows, there's like the age of innocence where people just play to play. Mm-hmm. And then there's the age of self-awareness where contestants have had a few seasons to watch the show and then they apply to go on it knowing full well what's going to happen. And then there's that level of self-awareness. Like nobody is directly looking at the camera yet on this show, but they're definitely bringing more drama and scandal than the first two seasons. And so it got a bit spicy.
In what way?
There was a bit more like emotion and calling out happening. I think there was even some aspects where people were trying to control the behavior of others, which I think crossed some boundaries of etiquette and behavior. And there was one main character who was so wishy-washy, Guan He, if anybody listening knows what I'm talking about. You know, they called him the if boy, the panel watching the show, but I think more of like an F boy might be more of the vibe.
Right.
So that's always a good time. From there, I segued into a whole bunch of different other shows. But you know what? Something came along last week, Queen, and it was just a short little trailer that knocked me back on my heels.
What was the trailer?
I want to talk to you about this. Have you watched the trailer for J-Lo's new movie, This Is Me Now?
Oh my goodness. I have seen the trailer. Yeah.
So what I did was I took the trailer and I just cut some of the best lines, I thought.
I know what they say about me. About hopeless romantics. That we're weak. And I'm not weak. But I learned the hard way. Not all love stories have a happy ending.
What are you guys doing here?
We think you might be a sex addict.
Every time I see you.
What?
Maybe.
Whenever someone asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, my answer was always in love.
Is this a documentary, Queen Kyle?
Oh my goodness. All I can say is, like, I was living. Obviously, she's so beautiful.
Yeah.
She's always so fashion forward. Oh, yeah. Like, her tracks are really amazing to dance to. She's an incredible dancer. She can't really sing, in my opinion, but she's an amazing actress. Like, I love her. Every movie that she's been in, I've always been, like, so there for it. So it does feel like this is going to be like a biopic of like every single marriage that she's had.
Yes.
Since she started.
Yes. You know that line at the end of that trailer, I always wanted to be in love.
Mm.
I actually do believe that that is J-Lo's internal mantra because that is a woman who loves love.
Literally.
She's on to her fourth marriage. Finally with Ben Affleck, right?
Did they get married before? No, they were
just dating. No, it was Geely and then the engagement and then no wedding. And then she got married to Mark Antony. He got married to Jennifer Garner. Right, the drama, the saga. The thing about this trailer, right, it is batshit.
Mm.
And the reactions I've observed so far is like this impulse to laugh at, right? I would say there's a lot of invitation to laugh in this trailer, but I am not laughing at. I think I'm in on it with J-Lo. I get that she knows that she has put out the most insane over-the-top trailer, and she's doing it smartly because it's marketing. Marketing. What do you think?
Oh, she's such a businesswoman. I totally agree. Because, like, obviously the visuals look incredible. Like, the costumes look amazing. She's got, like, dance scenes. It does feel like a musical of her love life, which is amazing. And there was one line that you didn't put in where she goes, being with you feels like home.
Yes!
But I left home for a reason. And I went, that is her, like, Real Housewives line when she walks in. Like, I had to stop that and replay. I replayed it, like, 10 times because it made me cackle out loud. I was like,
is that a read?
This is camp. Like, she is so camp. I feel like she's letting us in on the joke and she's letting us, like, take digs because people have been so critical.
They've been cruel to her.
Yeah, of her personal life, you know, not about her talent.
Yeah.
You know, they've always come for, like, the scandals and, like, looked at her marriages and the failed marriages rather than looking at her talent and all the amazing strides she's made, especially as a woman of color, working as a backup dancer to become, you know, the main event.
J-Lo is the original fly girl, right? We forget her trajectory, original fly girl to serious actor.
Yes.
If you doubt me, everybody, go back and watch that movie she was with George Clooney. She was good in that movie.
She was really good.
And then pivot to pop star and perfumes, right? Mm. And then superstardom after that and the marriages along the side. It's so much.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that even in the audio, the score of that trailer, right? It's like, what is it? Is it an epic sweeping drama?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a rom-com? Is it a perfume ad? Okay? It's all of those things.
It's like J-Lo. It's like her brand.
I wanted to be in love. That is a beautiful line from a perfume ad.
Right?
Get yourself to the chemist. Go get that perfume.
Go to the chemist.
And then this movie, This Is Me Now. Okay, Ben Affleck is just one of the cast members in it, her current husband.
Wow.
Ben Affleck, I'm sure he is smart enough to know that he will play whatever role J-Lo wants him to play in the movie.
Oh, definitely.
Don't you think there's a bit of, like, cleansing here? Because the last movie they were in together was Geely.
Flawed, oh, that's right.
There's a redemption arc moving in here in terms of the acting, but also in the love story.
Oh, well, you'd hope there'd be love there. Hopefully that line when she said, being with you feels like home, but that left home for a reason. Hopefully that's not for Ben Affleck. Hopefully she's not telling us she's onto her fifth marriage.
But, hopefully not. And then her album is dropping the same day. This feature is coming out on Amazon Prime. How much do you want to bet that album is going to go like bonkers bananas for sale on the sales website of that streaming service? So, like,
it's probably going to break the website, I can imagine.
It's business for J-Lo. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about the huge attention that the trailer for Shotgun Wedding got, and this is along those lines. So she is willing to embrace the silly, and I really feel like this is J-Lo's Everything Everywhere All at Once moment.
Oh, I love that.
She's jumping multiverses. She's got her steampunk epic musical going alongside the rom-com, going alongside the fragrance ad. Like, why can't she have it all? That has been her brand from day one, is why can't I do it all? And I kind of feel like this movie is showing that.
This is it.
I am doing it all right now, together, at the same time.
Oh, I totally agree. And it's really refreshing to see, because I feel like the last thing that I saw of her was the behind the scenes for the Super Bowl that they did.
Oh, Halftime. I watched that.
The Halftime Show. And that was really heartbreaking, like, to hear where she was talking about, of course, they wouldn't just give me my feature in Super Bowl. They've made me and Shakira the halftime show. Like, they made two Latina queens, you know, half it, rather than giving us our time to be, you know, individuals. And then there was the whole thing that they did with, she wanted to do, dedicated to her community about, you know, what Donald Trump wanted to do with building the walls. She wanted to do a little segment in her sets speaking to that, and obviously they had to pull it.
There's some challenge to putting those children in those cages as a metaphor for undocumented children and the immigration situation in the United States. So that's coming out February 16th. I will be very much looking forward to watching This Is Me Now, J-Lo. Frankly, I would watch anything that J-Lo is in, so they had me from Hello, but the trailer was already just like, sure, why not? But like, my point is, like, people want to laugh at J-Lo. I don't think we should be laughing at J-Lo. Like, when she puts herself on that crazy helicopter ride and like mashes up the genres, like, it's not due to lack of skill. Or lack of vision. And I just want to like leave that there for people to think about. All right, Queen, are you an award season fanatic? Like, do you get into award season? Because we're in the thick of it right now.
Yeah, look, like, I think in the past couple of years, I have definitely been following, because I feel like we've had a lot more representation, especially in the US, you know, queer, color, like, it's definitely been a thing. So I definitely am across this season for sure.
Okay, so Oscars nominations came out just this week, right? Mm. And there's a lot of interesting stuff in there. So Barbie movie.
Right.
Got some big shout-outs. Best Picture. Mm-hmm. Ryan Gosling got nominated for Best Actor. America Ferrera came through with a surprise. You know, Ugly Betty. I've loved her since Ugly Betty, right? She's nominated for Best Supporting Actor. A few exclusions, though, and I would love to know what you think. Australia's own Margot Robbie, who played Barbie and produced the film, has not been nominated for Best Actress. What do you think of that?
I think that's, can I say bullshit?
Yes, you can.
I think that's a crack of bullshit. To be honest, like, I would like to understand what the criteria was, why she wasn't nominated. Like, I thought she was exceptional in the movie, and she's also had a really exceptional trajectory. Like, she's been building herself over there for years in some pretty amazing roles. And this movie in particular, I definitely thought she would have been a shoo-in to be nominated or seen by the Academy at least.
I think she played Barbie really, really well. But also on top of that, she is one of the producers of this billion-dollar grossing film that is nominated for Best Picture. So then you think about how to balance those two roles while also coming through on screen. Though I suppose, you know, you could argue that she is nominated for Best Picture as a producer, so there's redemption there, but it is an interesting exclusion. And then director Greta Gerwig, who obviously would have a big influence on whether this film becomes Best Picture or not, has been left out of the Best Director nominations as well.
Oh, my goodness. It doesn't make sense. Like, the math isn't mathing. That
doesn't make sense.
Make it make sense. Like, it's quite upsetting, actually. Like, I think the more I think about it, I can only imagine what they would be thinking, obviously. I would be pissed.
Yeah. I think that's fair. But got to show up and smile graciously and applaud.
Absolutely.
Got to play the game. The Emmys were also an interesting watch. I feel like there were a couple of beautiful speeches there. In particular, Niecy Nash-Betts, who I have enjoyed since the days of Reno 911, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Here she is accepting her Emmy for a supporting actress in a limited series, and that was for Dahmer on Netflix.
I'm a winner, baby! Thank you to the Most High for this divine moment. Thank you, Ryan Murphy, for seeing me. Evan Peters, I love you. Netflix, every single person who voted for me, thank you. And my better half who picked me up when I was gutted from this work, thank you. And you know who I want to thank? I want to thank me. For believing in me and doing what they said I could not do. And I want to say to myself in front of all you beautiful people, go on, girl, with your bad self. You did that. Finally, I accept this award on behalf of every black and brown woman who has gone unheard yet over-policed, like Glenda Cleveland, like Sandra Bland, like Breonna Taylor. As an artist, my job is to speak truth to power, and baby, I'ma do it to the day I die. Mama, I won!
I mean, that speech, a minute and 6 seconds, just shows how much you can cover in a short period of time with the powerful words coming after without hesitancy, one after the other. She's thanking, she's hitting all those notes. When she came to that moment where she said, I want to thank me, I think we both grinned. Like, we both like, yes!
Absolutely.
Talk a little bit about how you feel when you hear her saying, I want to thank me. Why is that important? Why is that special?
Oh, I just felt like so proud of her. We've seen like her hustle, and I think because I watched the series and also like know that story so intimately, like I could only imagine what kind of turmoil it would have, you know, been to be that character, you know, because it's all based on a real story. So I felt so proud of her because, you know, in our own ways, especially navigating through our platforms, like, you know, being a person of color, you know, you do have to work 3 to 5 times harder than most people to be recognized and then to be, you know, acknowledged as well by the Academy, by an award, like receiving that kind of an accolade would be massive because you are, I guess, the beneficiary of the people that have helped you realize your potential. You know what I mean? But it is you that's paving the way. Like, I know that for her, I read some of her bio. In most spaces, she's like the first black woman or the only person of color that's in the room that has to do the educating. And I know what that feels like. You know, it's tiresome. It's like you feel like you're beating a dead horse and you don't know if people are listening, you know. And so, yeah, I just felt so proud of her. How did you feel?
I just thought it was such incredibly powerful words for her to just, like, I don't know if she came up with that on the fly or if it was just in her head. She had the names of the women at the end, you know, weaving through together, I think, the point that, like, pop culture is political, you know, both structurally and what we make. And she was able to connect those dots so well when she said, you know, I thank me and I work hard. It speaks to like comments about the math ain't mathing, about what the economics are like for black actors in Hollywood and how the pay gap is so huge and you've got to work harder. Then she makes a connection between the character she plays, a real life character, and real life women and being policed. I mean, I bow down to Niecy Nash. I think she deserves that Emmy without a doubt. Just one more little Emmy shout out, which is part of your universe, Queen Kong, finalist of season 2 of RuPaul's Drag Race Down Under. The mothership, RuPaul's Drag Race, right? Won, I don't know, like its bazillionth Emmy.
Absolutely.
For Best Reality Competition Show. And then RuPaul won Best Reality Show Host again for, again, the bazillionth year. Here's part of RuPaul's speech accepting for Best Competition Reality Show.
We have released into the wild hundreds of drag queens. And they're beautiful, and they're beautiful. On behalf of all of them, we thank you. And listen, if a drag queen wants to read you a story at a library, listen to her, because knowledge is power. And if someone tries to restrict your access to power. They are trying to scare you. So listen to a drag queen. We love you. Thank you.
I mean, Queen, what's that like for you? You know that you are one of the hundreds of drag queens released into the wild that RuPaul is referring to. Now, that directly references someone like you. What's that like to hear that on that big stage?
Oh, look, you know, I think the thing about RuPaul, you know, a lot of people give her flack for things that they speculate. It's like J-Lo, you know, like when you're a public figure, people are always looking for things that you do. They're just looking for controversy so they can talk badly about you. But, you know, Ru's intention has always been to create a platform, you know, a jumping pad for those under her, like myself, to come find your lane and trailblaze, you know. And I think her saying that, especially with the political climate that they are at in the US at the moment, and especially the repercussions that we're feeling here in Australia, you know, I feel honored to be a part of that legacy, but also I know the weight and the responsibility of being one of those queens, because when the Logies happened and I got nominated, everyone else that was nominated got so much love. And I think I got like half love and lots of like hatred.
People and going, do you think that was a result of like the current sort of anti-drag queen, like there's legislation, there's like stuff going on with like drag queen story times? You felt like that was a direct impact?
I feel like that it's definitely been an impact on that. It's really brought up like a undercurrent of people that have always kind of been more comfortable with us being in the closet. And now that we're more in mainstream, it's the whole thing of stay away from the kids. If anything, you know, the predators aren't the ones dressed up in gorgeous drag, you know, in glamorous costumes. You know, we're empowering. And, you know, the thing that RuPaul always says is, you know, lead with love. And she reminds us that it takes a village, you know. And so I feel like hearing her say those words, especially because she got the army of the season 16 girls to go up with her on stage as well as the producers. It was just amazing to see that image receiving that award with her and her acknowledging all of us.
Because the stage was filled with dozens of people were crowding around RuPaul and Michelle Visage. And Queen, the reality of having a drag queen babysit you is that they will take you to the cinema three times
right.
in the same week. Yeah. Feed you and let you watch the same movie and talk about it. So it's actually a win.
My niece and nephew, like, they literally look at Queen Kong like she's a superhero, you know. It's so normalized in the household that we don't have conversations around sexuality because they're not at that place where we need to have those kinds of conversations. But they understand that, you know, Uncle dresses up as a beautiful, glamorous Polynesian goddess, you know, to pay the bills.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To pay for the
movie. You
want to
go to that
ticket.
Movie? Yeah. Uncle's got to go to work now, okay?
Yes, I've got to put these nails on and these lashes and, you know, hit the stage. But
these tickets don't pay for themselves.
Yeah.
Queen Kong, I want to thank you so much. It's been an absolute blast and a pleasure to have you open the house of Stop Everything 2024 with me. This week, Stop Everything was recorded and produced on the lands of the Eora and Kulin Nations and on the land of the Muwinina people from country around Nipaluna. Stop Everything is produced by Sarah Mashman and me. Our executive producer is Tom Wright. Our sound engineer is Angie Grant. Sydney folks, if you want more Queen Kong in your life, Queen is appearing in Smashed, the Nightcap, at the Sydney Festival until the 27th of January. Ticket details are available online. And Adelaide, Garner Country, you will have your chance as well because Queen Kong will be hosting Black Puddin', a drag and dine show. Buckets of chicken there, Queen Kong, or no?
Oh, many. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And margaritas, yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
To wash them down.
Great. At Adelaide Fringe from February 16th to March 17th, find more details on the Adelaide Fringe site. Queen, how can people find you on socials?
My handle is Queen Kong Official everywhere. So find me on X, Instagram, and I think I still got a Facebook page. I don't know why, but I've got one of those. So find me on Facebook too if you're that way inclined.
And in case you're wondering, Queen Kong is spelled K-K, okay? So you will not miss it. Queen, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming in and, you know, making this house warm and welcome. Here's to having an amazing 2024. I feel like we're going to be seeing more and more of you. You're just going to get bigger and better. Please come back and stop everything again with me soon.